boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 10 minutes into hour three on this busy Thursday. Just off with Sean Clancy as we enjoyed some Cheltenham, and Dave Hill jumps in with the Thursday, 11 o'clock, the traditional Dave Hill hour. And we got, obviously, NCAAs to talk about, and Dave got involved with a Calcutta. He'll explain what's involved there. But the first order of business is some Hot Springs conversation. Dave, first of all, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I think you caught my visit to Oaklawn and the surprise visit of Randy Moss into the press box at Oaklawn. He was home for a few days to his native Hot Springs, and he used to be the most well-known person from Hot Springs until you came along.
And neither one of us can hold that crown, sir.
Well, who?
The most well-known person from Hot Springs is Bill Clinton.
But, you know, okay, all right, wait a minute. Here's the issue, though. I stopped in Hope on my way from New Orleans. I got a great burger, and isn't Hope, don't they really get the claim to owning Bill Clinton?
Well, they sure try, but no, they don't. He was born in Hope, that's true. He was born in Hope, Arkansas, but he moved to Hot Springs when he was a baby. I mean, he went to Hot Springs schools from kindergarten till he graduated from Hot Springs High School. And his family all lived there and continued to live there. I mean, his mother died there and was buried there. Now, if you were born in a place called Hope and you ran for president, wouldn't you? I mean, that's just, you know, that's a layup there to write a speech about being from a place called Hope. But no, I mean, anybody that knows Bill Clinton knows that he could only be from America's forgotten capital of vice. he is a product through and through of Hot Springs and its politics and culture and everything else. So, yeah.
Well, I was aghast that Randy has not read The Vapors, number one.
Me too. What the heck, Randy?
I know, and I meant to call your mother and get a copy of the book into his hands, but things got away from us, so we still have to do that. And it was funny because Sandy Montgomery said, you said to him, "You, we were off the air, I think." And he said, "You know her. She ran the sawmill." And right? Is that accurate?
That's right.
You said you got to know Pam. She ran the sawmill.
That was the spot back in the 70s and 80s. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I love it. The other thing you've got to comment on. I'm sitting in a absolutely packed, and right now nobody can get into DeLuca's, thanks to the pizza review. They're lined up out the door now every day for Anthony Velotti's masterpiece coming out of the pizza oven. But Saturday night after Rebel, Dave, there's a very strong rumor about a movie production coming to Hot Springs, and I could only associate it with your project.
I wish. No, I've actually been getting text messages like from people about that, and that's the rumor going around town is that they're shooting something about the book there. But that's not it. I don't know what's going on or what they're filming, but it ain't got nothing to do with me.
Well, I'm disappointed. The name connected to it is Kevin Costner.
Yeah, you know, he hangs around town sometimes, and I don't know what that's about, but maybe he owns some property or something around there, but he's been spotted in town from time to time, and I've heard a lot of Kevin Costner-related rumors about Hot Springs over the years, but so far none of them have proven true. We'll see if he's filming something there or not. It'd be cool if he was.
Well, having watched The Last of Us, with that behind us, we need the vapors. The vapors has got to be mounted sooner than later.
From your lips to David Zaslav's ears, I hope.
All right, let's dive into what research you've done, because the NCAAs are going to start in 45 minutes, and both Colgate and Arkansas are involved again this year. After we played each other, that was wild. Last year, explain to everybody what you're doing with that Calcutta and how that works.
Yeah, well, the first thing I'll say is that I'm not a huge fan of college basketball. I find it to be a very inferior form of basketball to the NBA. But I am a big fan of the tournament because it offers so many interesting and fun betting opportunities. You know, it's a very dynamic market, you know, with the 64-team tournament between futures and also the individual games that are on the menu, you know, the next couple of days. And the bracket pools that you can get into, and also Calcutta auctions, which I'm a big fan of, offer really fun opportunities to bet on, you know, the unique betting opportunities for people who enjoy gambling. So I think the March Madness tournament is a lot of fun, even though I don't particularly love watching, you know, kids play basketball. Having said that, we often do get a lot of really fun nail biter games during the tournament, which is also exciting. So I haven't watched a lot of basketball this season, and I'm not handicapping this from the perspective of someone who like is deeply enmeshed into what happened this season. But I really don't think you have to be to get an edge on some of your local small bracket pools or even in a Calcutta auction with folks. Because like with a lot of sports gambling, you know, knowing a lot about sports isn't necessarily give you an edge, but understanding, you know, the markets sometimes can. So, I was in a Calcutta auction this season. I've been in one for the last couple of seasons, and you know, people who enjoy horse racing might have some experience with Calcuttas. People often do them for big races like the Derby or the Breeders' Cup at their parties. The Calcutta auction really kind of creates a parimutuel pool. We auction off each team in the tournament. You buy the team goes to whoever the highest bidder is, and we do that randomly for all 64 teams. The amount of money that everybody bids creates a pot, right? The pot that we're gambling over. And then each time your team wins a game in the tournament, you get some predetermined share of that pot without any VIG. So this you know, offers an opportunity to create, you know, really positive expected value betting situations where if your sort of sense of what a team's probability is, you know, differs from what the market you've created with this pool is, you can, you know, make some good bets. And I think it's incredibly fun. I think it's fun both from trying to do the work of predicting those probabilities, but then when you're actually in the auction, it's a lot like playing a game of poker. You know, there's a lot of psychology involved in how the and emotions can take over for people who really want to try to win an auction, or people who want to try to push the price up in an auction and bid it up higher than it should go. And, you know, the strategies you have to put together, you know, kind of on the fly as the auction takes shape and you know what the pot is going to be, you know, your strategy shifts and changes as the pot grows or shrinks and as you have a sense of what that pot is. So it's a lot of fun. I think it's a lot of fun to participate in and play in these Calcutta auctions.
Well, and for those that play fantasy baseball and any fantasy sport, particularly baseball, though, because the models, probably football too, but I know of it more for baseball. You know, a website like Baseball HQ, and you know, some of the real elite sabermetricians, and you know, they have these auctions, the computerized auctions, which basically, you know, provide a read, and it's basically same as we talked about with the computer simulations, right, for the NFL season, and what those project. Was on the verge. I got busy actually, and got diverted yesterday. I was going to subscribe to Unabated that we talked about quite a bit during the football season, which I imagine will be a, you know, very valuable tool here over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, it is. I used it in making my preparations for this Calcutta auction. Mainly used the calculators it has to take the vig out of betting odds. Right. I mean, when I was making my probabilities for the tournament, I was using power ratings like you're talking about, these kind of like, you know, advanced stats power ratings that smart people like Ken Pomeroy and others put together for these teams, but also using the betting market information, which I think is probably more valuable. I mean, when you talk about, you know, kind of statistic driven power ratings that are created for these teams, those are made throughout the regular season to try to predict a team's performance throughout the regular season. But a tournament like this, a single elimination tournament, the volatility is really high. And so I like to look at what's going on in the betting markets for some, you know, kind of more up to the minute, interesting information. And when you take the futures markets on who's going to win the championship and you take the VIG, you know, you de-VIG them with some of the calculators you can get at places like Unabated, you can come up with a number that can really add value to your power ratings and give you some more, you know, give you some probabilities for each round of the tournament that maybe your opponents that you're playing against who are all looking at those same websites maybe don't have.
So how do you suggest, and obviously it's, you know, the things start here in half an hour, give or take. So it's a little bit, you know, a little bit late in terms of even filling out brackets, although I am counting on you to give me a couple of steamers that I can make an adjustment in my own, you know, at the races tournament challenge. I'm invariably bad because I rely on certain teams year in, year out. And of course, the 1 year I failed to pick Kansas, who's my go-to year after year, after having lived in Kansas City and having dated a girl for 6 years who went to KU. I pick Kansas every year. Last year I didn't. So it's just unbelievable. Yeah. It's so annoying. But there's certain teams I count on every year, like Xavier. I'm a sucker for Xavier, and they're quite good. Iowa State, because I used to call on Ames. I made sales calls at Iowa State. You know, so
yeah,
I've got
guys like you are why this is such a fun opportunity to gamble. Is all the homers, you know, and it's true in Calcutta auctions too. If you know that there's a couple people in your auction who are homers for a particular team, you can really punish them by making them pay way too much money for the team that they desperately want to get. And it's the same when you're in a pool. If you're in a small pool with people and you know that people are going to pick a certain team to go far because they're homers for that team, that helps you pick, you know, makes sort of smart choices about your own bracket so that you can kind of hedge against that. But yeah, I mean, Kansas is getting steamed right now. I'm looking at the screen, and I think the news that came out this morning about Bill Self not coaching is steaming the number on Howard. So they're now at 21 and a half. So that number is moving, and Let me give you, I think for people who are still filling out their brackets this morning and are trying to get one in at the last second, I think a couple of interesting places to look is the first is the 7-10 matchups. When they first really, after Selection Sunday and the numbers first went up in the betting markets, every single 7 seed was an underdog in market. Some of those have been now bet back to being slight favorites, but I think the markets have all these games close, and some of the 10 seeds are actually favored over the 7 seeds. And so that's maybe a good place for you to look for first round upsets, is picking the 10 seeds over the 7 seeds. The ones that I think are the most interesting are Boise State, who are actually favored over Northwestern, still in the market. And then you've got a very close matchup between Michigan State and USC, where I think the line is only 2. Penn State, I think, is a less interesting 10 seed over the 7 seed. They're getting 3 points now with against Texas A&M. But then in the South bracket, Utah State are favored over Missouri. And a lot of people think Missouri is maybe way over, that they might be seeded way too high at 7. And Utah State might have an interesting path here. If they get through the first round and beat Missouri, they might have an interesting path playing Arizona in the next round. So those are a couple places in your bracket to look for upsets. But generally, if you're in a small bracket pool, you don't want to go too out. You don't want to get too out of line. You want to be pretty conservative in the early rounds. I think in small bracket pools, where you want to look to be clever, is in the later rounds and how you pick who's going to make it to the Final Four.
Interesting. Boise State, Northwestern in the West. Because of course I'm watching the tonight. Colgate in Texas, you can see some of the cuteness that this committee that puts this together for the NCAA, where they place Texas A&M as the 7 seed, hoping that they get a Texas A&M Texas matchup in the second round.
Right. They're definitely being cute. Another good place to look for an upset is in the Miami Drake game in the Midwest. Drake is a good option for a big upset here. Miami, even if you have them winning in the first round, I was looking at sort of all the teams that the betting markets have, the sort of top 20 teams to win the whole tournament, and Miami is the only 5 seed that's not even in the top 20. So the betting markets do not have a lot of hope for Miami to travel very far in this tournament. So I think, if you're another place to look for an upset to really differentiate your bracket might be to choose Drake here as 3-point underdogs against the 5 seed Miami in the first round.
But this is so funny because without even having talked to you, most of these that you've discussed, I picked Utah State. I picked Drake. I always pick Drake because I them and Creighton, for whatever reason, I think some of my college preferences go back to those packages of book covers that you used to get at the Five and Dime to cover your right? And you get those college, remember those college, there would be colleges, there'd be these random colleges, and I remember the Drake logo, the duck, and Creighton, the Blue Jay, and Temple. I always thought, being Jewish, I thought I was going to always go to college at Temple because I thought it was somehow a Jewish school, because it was Temple. It was so crazy when I was a little kid. And I'm sure I had a Colgate book cover at one time, but that's where I ended up. But anyway, I'm on you with a bunch of these. There was a period where the 5-12 matchup sort of became the new 7-10.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the 7-10 matchup, I mean, the 7s historically do really well versus the 10s as well. They should. But this year is just an interesting year. Not only is it an interesting year in that the 7s all opened up as betting underdogs, but really, if you look at the top seeds, I mean, there's not a single one seed this year that really has a better than 15% chance to win it all, which is different than recent years. We don't have an overwhelming favorite here, and there's a lot of interest. There's a pretty close market sentiment and even power rating sentiment out there with the people that follow the sport between Alabama and Houston. And so I think that gives you an opportunity in your bracket too. Alabama's being, if you look at sort of where people across the country are making their picks in their brackets, the numbers are showing that a lot more people are picking Alabama than Houston. If you look in your own bracket that you may join in the next half hour, if you look in your own pool that there's more people picking Alabama, you might want to pick Houston to give yourself, some differentiation there. But if the trick is, if you're going to pick Houston, to make it. Then in the other three sections of the bracket, you don't want to pick one seeds. You want to pick two and three seeds to make upsets there, because even if you make your one seed to the end against another one seed, you may not have enough differentiation to win your pool. So I think what, you know, a good strategy is, if you say, if you pick Houston to make it, then you want to pick Marquette, Arizona, Gonzaga, maybe Connecticut, you know, teams like that, to make it there with them, to give yourself a shot at winning at all. That way, if Houston gets upset, you can still win if one of your teams upsets another number one seed. But if you're just picking one seeds, you know, to go up against one seeds, you may end up with a less chance. So, you know, you just have to think strategically based on what other people in your pool that you're in are doing, if you have the ability to see their picks or can kind of guess at what their picks are going to be.
What do you make? What's your ideal Final Four?
Well, you know, my ideal would be to see Arkansas get there, and I'm a big, you know, Razorback fan, so I'll be cheering for them in every round that they can make it to this year. Do I think they can make the Final Four? I don't know. I think it'd be amazing if they got there. You know, Alabama's an SEC team that I am rooting for them to get there. But look, in the Calcutta that I'm in, we paid $7,000 to get Houston in the Calcutta, so I really need that team to win it all at this point.
Wow.
So I'll be cheering on Houston. I also got UCLA in a smaller Calcutta I'm in, and you know, UCLA had a big injury that I think has downgraded some of people's hopes for them. I think they're still good. I think they still got a strong enough team that for a two seed, I like UCLA's chances, especially given the path that they get to take, because they have to go through Kansas, who I think are weaker this year than they were last year. So I like UCLA. I have some financial stake in UCLA making it deep as well.
Interesting. Just looking at mine, I've got, again, as I can't resist Kansas, I've got Houston, Kansas, Alabama, and Marquette. I like Marquette.
I do too, and I think Purdue's the weakest of the one seeds, and the markets agree with me there. They're the longest shot to win it all of all the one seeds, and are even the longer shot than a couple of two seeds. So the East is a good place for a team like Marquette. Has an interesting path to get there. I think Kansas State is a little bit vulnerable as well. I think Providence is another interesting long shot choice over Kentucky. Providence can make it out of that first round, I think Providence can actually beat Kansas State because they're vulnerable. But all that sets up well for Marquette. So I do think Marquette is a good choice to try to, if you're going to be a one seed, beat them in the East.
Who else?
Memphis. Memphis is another one in the East that I like a lot. And they're an eight seed. But I mean, this is just, you know, this has become a really strong basketball program recently. And again, this is a team that I think, when you look at how people are picking in the brackets versus the betting markets, people are off market and not choosing Memphis to go deeper than they do. Because I think a lot of people have Memphis losing in the second round to Purdue. But I really think Memphis has an opportunity that they could beat Purdue. And if they beat Purdue, I think they go deep here. You know, I would love to see a Memphis-Duke matchup, and I think that would be a really fun and interesting game, both from a betting perspective but also to watch. And I would be all over Memphis, just because Memphis is essentially a part of Arkansas.
That's funny. Is there a high teen, you know, a team, a 13-14 type that you can see winning once or twice?
Yeah, I mean, the one interesting kind of low-seeded team that I was interested in was Kent State. And Kent State are a 13 seed going up against Indiana in the first round, but they're only 4.5-point underdogs. So I thought that was a pretty interesting spot, given that some of the other 13 seeds are all double-digit underdogs. You know, Montana State, a 14 seed, who are 8.5-point underdogs. So those are a couple, when you look at the betting markets, that I feel like, and Iona against Connecticut was 8.5, which I think is kind of ridiculous. I actually think Connecticut is a stronger team than that, but, definitely, Kent State is one of the double digit seeds that I think has good upset potential here in the first round.
They're playing
Indiana.
Indiana.
Yeah. You got North Carolina State or an 11 seed against Creighton in the first round. I like you. I really like Creighton. But again, NC State, we're getting something like 5.5 points. That number may have moved since I wrote it down. But 5.5 points seemed low to me. So as much as I like Creighton, you know, if we trust the betting markets at all, they think that Creighton are only 5.5 points better than the Wolfpack here. So I don't know. That's another one worth looking at if you're looking for upsets. But again, if you're in a small bracket pool, you want to be conservative in the early rounds. Don't look for lots of big upsets in the early rounds because, you know, if you're in a big bracket pool with like 200 people in it, then you do with the opposite of what I'm saying. Then you want to, you know, you want to swing for the fences a little bit and try to differentiate your bracket by having more upsets in the first round. But in a small pool, I think you want to differentiate yourself in the later rounds and be more conservative early.
Dave Hill with us talking about the approach to the tourney and obviously 63 games to be played. So there's countless ways to approach this, including, by the way, the over-unders. And there's some speculation. I mean, obviously, if you get two run-and-gun offenses against each other, that's one thing. But I know that one thing I heard in Vegas last week was – the concept of betting unders here, especially early rounds, just because kids come in tight and you know, they're using averages for the season and the defenses kind of drilled down a little tighter, you know, once these games get going, and that unders end up predominating here the first couple of days.
Well, we talked about this with the NFL, too, when we were talking about props over on Super Bowl week. And the same logic applies here because this is another, you know, March Madness is another incredibly liquid betting market where there's a lot more public money than there is the rest of the season. And I think the logic for unders here is just that people are going to bet the overs, so it just steams the number. People like to bet on overs. It's just as simple as that. They look at the number and they think it seems too low. I mean, a lot of what you're describing and saying is true, but also that stuff gets baked in by the bookmakers. So, you know, we're not going to like out handicap the bookmakers on the looking at the season statistics front. But what we can do is just assume that if we bet right now, you know, 30 minutes before tip off, that the number is going to steam towards the over, or the number is going to be steamed up, so the under will have some slight value in it. So, yeah, pick. You know, I would play unders if I'm playing right now. Now, if you're betting on Monday morning when the numbers first get put out, you might need to think a little bit about whether there might be value on the over there because of the initial numbers might be off a little bit. But yeah, here we are at 11:30 on Thursday, so. Under feels good. Feels like a good bet, even blind.
Well, for those of you that are playing in the at the races tourney challenge, if you haven't, if you're looking at the grid, there's a terrific tool that if you click on the information to the right of the matchup, you get a fabulous capsule, which gives you the odds, the money line, the over under, etc., and then you know, blurbs about each team. Very helpful and a terrific at a glance. Very impressed with this. I mean, so you don't even necessarily, you know, if you're somebody that wants to make your own decisions based on what you've seen and you just need a little added, you know, information, it's right here at your fingertips. This is nice. I mean, it's amazing how quickly, Dave, the various, you know, resource sites have adjusted to the way in which the betting public, you know, wants information at their fingertips.
Yeah, and just to give you another example of why I think March Madness is such a fascinating betting proposition is, you know, right now I'm just looking at the screen and the Penn State Texas A&M game tonight, looking at the total for that game, you know, Pinnacle, which is kind of the worldwide, you know, market leader, one of the sharpest books, has the number set at 136, but you've got numbers across market as low, you know, Wynn has it at 134.5. So there's a huge difference there. I mean, there's a gap of, you know, a whole point and a half. And, you know, Pinnacle's juiced the under there a little bit, but, you know, this is a good example of where you can get a good under on the Pinnacle number, and or you can use the Pinnacle number to see value in the over, maybe at 134.5. So given so many betting propositions and so many different places to bet around the country and around the world, you just can you can shop lines and find differences in the lines in a way that you can't when you're just betting on a single game or on a menu of only 12 or 13 games like you do in the NFL. You know, so this is just such a bonanza in terms of finding value.
That's what makes it fun. And it's always fun to discuss these kinds of opportunities with Dave Hill. And as I told you yesterday, the other day when I reached out, this would have been a good time to launch the website, SueySeer.com.
For all your Arkansas homer picks,
one-stop shopping. By the way, how about Randy Moss refusing to call the Hogs for me?
I don't understand that. I mean, we're, you know, yeah, it's a little undignified, but so is being from Arkansas.
Hey, now there we go. That's a great. Can you with the Razorbacks? What time is that game? By the way,
when
is
I went to Bill Clinton's inauguration in '92 because I was. A student at Hot Springs, half of our high school went, and I can't tell you how many people, that's all you heard in D.C. that whole week was just people calling the Hogs in the street, and folks just, they didn't understand what was going on. They thought a bunch of aliens had come to town. I mean, it truly is one of the weirdest college cheers in the country, but by God, we're going to do it.
Well, then send us off with a call.
Pig, Suey.
There it is. There we go. We got one. Dave's not embarrassed to call the Hogs. You and goes a long way toward endearing the public. Dave, I appreciate it. Enjoy. Good luck, and maybe we'll check in next week for the round of 16.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Good luck, everybody.
Tremendous. Dave Hill, everybody. Dave Hill 77 on your Twitter machine. Let's swing quickly to Rich Eng and get Rich's plays. First tip-off is 12:15. And I tell you, you people have really responded to my exhortation here, because we've had about, I think we had 95 signed up, and now suddenly there's 120-something. So you guys absolutely... ready to roll into the tournament, and I'm glad I reminded everybody. It's just fun. I mean, these 4 days are the best. These first 4 days of the tournament, with, you know, the nonstop action, and then it slows down. Rich Eng is back with us, and we spent the whole weekend. Friday, Saturday, Sunday with Rich, doing just tremendous work, pitching in to cover the NHC, 6 hours each on Saturday and Sunday, and 4 hours on Friday. So, Rich, thanks again for, you know, the all-out effort. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Steve. You know, we've been doing this for quite a few years now, and I really enjoy spending the time with you. And I think the revelation of the weekend was the emergence of Brian Troop as a media star. He started out kind of reticent on day one, but by the end of the coverage that we had from the Horseshoe Las Vegas, you couldn't keep him quiet.
No, he was. In fact, I even had a couple of the Canadian friends, most notably Lauren Weiss and Alan and everybody and Ray Arsenault, and they all were laughing. We went to dinner on Friday night, and they said, "We understand you got a new co-host on the row," and they were laughing. You know, they know him really well, and it was just very funny. He didn't know what to expect, and then he really enjoyed himself, and it made for a fun for him, you know, after getting knocked out and not playing into the contest. It gave him something to do, and he was, you know, you could really tell it was important to him to give a winner out, you know, each day, and he ended up giving about, you know, he went about 500. I think he gave 5 out of 10 plays hit, and some, and 4 of them were $20 horses. So way, way positive ROI from Brian. And I got one myself, that nice one that the horse of Vacarezes in the Captiva Island. That was terrific. Little Jewel was a nice score. Mm-hmm. So we
yes.
It was fun. It always is. And, you know, so many players, that winner is a popular, going to be a very popular ambassador for the NHC. You know, a guy that... you know, clearly grew up going to the racetrack and absolutely relishes his opportunity. And the style, Rich, that he utilized may serve as a template. It's amazing how often this happens. He basically focused on his favorite track and played Oaklawn as much as he could, and it paid off.
Yeah, that was really interesting listening to him talk. In fact, I still want to go back to the archives because I did have trouble hearing a little bit from where I was sitting. But I really want to listen to everything Charles said about the winning the tournament. And, you know, it just goes to show you this is kind of like the World Series of Poker, and the fact that, you know, it's very difficult to have a repeat winner. There's so many great candidates out there and different unique players qualifying each year for the NHC that the field's going to keep growing, and you're going to get quality guys, quality handicappers like this who are just going to just explode on the scene. And he should be a great ambassador. I just echo your sentiments, a great ambassador for horse handicappers for the next year.
Well, as always, always fun for me to come to Vegas. It's now, you know, become an annual thing, and every so often we might get there twice. We had the year that HPPA actually one year had the convention there. Jockeys in Jeans, as Tony mentioned, there'll be another invasion of racetrack personnel and industry related people coming for Jockeys in Jeans in June. Right now, of course, tournament getting ready to rock and roll, about exactly a half an hour away. 12:15, the first tip-off. And, Rich, I just had Dave Hill, and Dave talked about his approach. He's involved in one big money and one small money Calcutta. You've had tremendous success over the years with us. We talk about what a good sports bettor you are over and above your handicapping and horseplay. Let's latch on to some teams. You do this every year. You pick a handful of teams you think are ready to make runs.
Yeah, I'm a big futures bettor, whether it's the Kentucky Derby, or the NFL, NBA. The same goes with the NCAA basketball tournament. I do like to bet futures, and I always say I look for value. And the teams that I am invested in, you're not going to see the number one seeds because nobody needs me to tell them to go bet a 3 or a 4 to 1 shot to win the basketball tournament, the number one seed. But here are the teams that I have in my pocket and the odds that I have them at. I have San Diego State. I took a flyer on them because I got them at 70-1. And, you know, they're obviously the biggest of the long shots that I have. But they're one of the teams that has a style, Steve, that likes to squeeze the air out of the basketball. And, you know, at this time of year, sometimes you see a team like St. Peter's last year, Loyola of Chicago, Butler. You know, the pace of play a lot of times is controlled by the underdog who's trying to either limit the number of possessions and trying to frustrate the more talented team. And if you can get hot from shooting three-point range, you can definitely have David beating Goliath. I'm kind of hoping that happens today with your Colgate team. That'd be kind of cool to see. But, you know, the underdogs have a shot. And so San Diego State is one team that I took a run at 70-1. I also bet Virginia from the ACC. I really think the ACC is being underrated this year. There are a lot of opinion has either the SEC or the Big 12 as the strongest basketball conference in the country. But I think some of these ACC teams might surprise, similar to what North Carolina did last year to reach the championship game against Kansas. And you know, Tony Bennett's another coach who likes to take the air out of the basketball and keep the game in the 50s and the 60s. So Virginia at 60-1 is another team that I have. I also got a great number on Duke out of the ACC. I got Duke at 30-1, and they went on a stretch, Steve, where they have won their last nine games in a row, including the ACC tournament where they did beat Virginia. But, you know, a team like Duke, when they recruit, you know, even if they're not having a great season, their roster still has five, six, seven McDonald's All-Americans. So a lot of times it's just they underachieve. But in the case of Duke, you know, they kind of floundered the first half of the season. But I think John Shire really has them playing their best basketball now, which is important. Obviously, this is tournament time. So Duke at 30-1, I thought, was a really solid play. I did try Miami of Florida, another team out of the ACC. This echoes my sentiment that I think the ACC is going to sneak up on a lot of schools this year, a lot of players. But I got Miami at 50-1 to win their region. I'm a big Jim Larrañaga fan. He's a tremendous coach. I believe he took George Mason to the Final Four. So, I mean, he can coach the heck out of the basketball. Another team I took, this is my lowest price, but I took the UConn Huskies. I got them at 18-1. It's not a great price, but they started the season red hot. They got into the top five. Then they had a terrible stretch in the middle of the season. But I think Hurley's got them playing good basketball again. So I got them at 18-1. And then the last team that I have at the sixth in my futures is I bought the Baylor Bears. In the middle of the season, they lost like three or four games in a row, really tough games in the Big 12. And their odds actually snuck up to 34-1, and I ran over the circa and actually got some money down on them. So I've got Baylor at 34-1. So those are the six teams. If I can upset the number one seed, I hope it's one of these six. But I got San Diego State at 70, Virginia at 60, Duke at 30, Miami at 50, UConn at 18, and I have the Baylor Bears at 34-1.
And that's just to get win the bracket, just get to the Final Four.
Unfortunately, for me, they got to go all the way.
They do have to. Okay, I thought because at one point you said the bracket, and I wasn't sure if that just meant winning, basically getting to the Final Four, because there's odds for that too.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's odds for everything, and a breakdown of the tournament. But the odds that I bet these teams, they have to win the championship game. But, if they get to the Final Four, there are certain things as a bettor that you can do to try to offset it, to at least be able to pull some money out of the wager and kind of like be a safety net. So if I had a Final Four of all these four teams, I'd be in heaven. But, chances are some of them are going to get waylaid like road apples on the side of the road. But if I can get a couple of them to the Final Four, there are ways I can bet and offset that and pull some money out of it.
Well, there's one thing you did here that's interesting. When you look at that South bracket, by having three teams in the South bracket, San Diego State, who's fifth, comes in fifth ranked, Virginia four, and roulette. It's the concept of basically utilizing a string of numbers on a certain spot in the wheel, and maybe maybe it's five or six numbers that are next to each other, and the theory is when you're looking for repeaters, you're looking for a croupier that's going to get into a certain rhythm, and over the course of a short burst of spins, the peg is going to find its way to that section of the wheel, several times. And this was taught to me years ago by somebody I worked with, who was very successful. I mean, he would watch for somebody that they have that record, the visual record of the spins, and anybody that was getting pairs of numbers, basically repeaters, or a number that was appears twice or even three times over the course of, let's say, 20 spins, because random, chaotic number theory says that yes, every number will be represented over the course of 10,000 rolls or spins, but in a short burst, there's reasons that the same numbers come up or groups of numbers come up a number of times, and if you concentrate on that. So what you've got is sort of that theory that one of those teams could emerge from the South and give you, you know, a live horse essentially into the Final Four.
Yeah, and also another angle. I know some of your listeners might have written down the numbers, and maybe they're checking out the odds on their phone app and saying, well, these teams aren't that same odds anymore. Well, I must admit that, you know, some of these bets were made during the course of the season, so the numbers may not be available exactly right now. For example, you know, the Baylor bet at 34-1, I bought that in the middle of the season off a losing streak. And so, you know, their odds are probably a little bit lower now going into the tournament. Same with UConn. I bought them in the middle of the season when they were on a losing streak. And, you know, a lot of times you have to project if a team is going to rebound off a bad stretch and start playing better because, you know, the losing streak accelerates their odds in the upward direction. You know, if the Baylor now might be like 25-1 or 20-1 versus 34-1, but you know, they were cold for a while there when they lost the three or four games straight up. And you know, same with Duke. You know, I got them at 30-1 and then they got hot. They're probably not 30-1 anymore, but you know, you try to maximize the value of these teams as you go along. So I'm keeping an eye on this stuff all season long, Steve, to try to maximize my value to try to hit one of these.
Any individual plays that you can see? And was it you and I that were talking about playing the unders early here with, you know, defenses tight and playing tight and also, you know, the kids just getting nervous? I mean, unless it's a couple of run-and-gun type offenses that the unders come in here these first couple of days more often than not?
Yeah, we were actually talking about it on Friday of the NHC. I had mentioned that I was having a good run in the conference tournaments,
yeah,
playing unders. And it's something that a style that I've kind of developed over the years, and the fact that I like playing unders in totals because, you know, a lot of these cases, especially in tournament play and now in the NCAA basketball tournament, it's one and done. So there's a lot of pressure on the kids to play their best game. A lot of times that affects how you score because, you know, the rim gets a little smaller or the there's a little air taken out of the basketball. And also, you know, a factor that I think comes into play is when the bookmakers, who are the sharpest people in the sports betting market, set these numbers, they usually use regular season data to establish the totals. But I believe in tournament play, a lot of times, especially the underdog or a team that likes to play defense like Virginia, they will take the air out of the ball even more so because they value each possession so much more. So I like playing unders, and a lot of times the shooting averages go down too because you're playing a lot of times these kids are playing in a gym, an arena that they've never seen before. And so the sight lines are a little different. The defensive intensity is a lot higher. So I think it just tends to lend toward lower scores. So as far as giving out some picks on unders, I'm going to give out three unders for your listeners, and let's see if we can get 3-0, 2-1 for sure to get these under plays, Steve. But the rotation number here in Las Vegas, I'll start with game number 738. San Diego State is one of the teams that I have in the futures. They're playing the College of Charleston, which a lot of people like as a live underdog. I believe they're like 31-3, which is one of the best records, regular season records in the tournament. But I got them at 142.5, under 142.5. So if the game is in the 60s, I'm pretty safe there. But I like that under. The next game under is 740, Virginia. I've talked about Tony Bennett and how he likes to take the air out of the basketball. But I've got them at 132.5, under 132.5, playing Furman. And then the third total that I bet under is 742, is Tennessee. I got them at under 138.5. They lost their point guard late in the season, and I think that Rick Barnes, in particular now with losing his point guard, is going to try to limit the possessions. So those are three unders that I have. San Diego State under 142.5, Virginia under 132.5, and Tennessee under 136.5. I just hope for close games to get through that.
There you go. And if people want to throw in one more under, I'll give you Princeton and Arizona under as well. That comes later today in the South. Rich, thanks again for everything. Just fabulous support. I couldn't do it without you. And we will talk next week. I'll be in Ocala, and we'll talk to you then.
Sounds good. And let's go 4-0 with the basketball. That'd be fun.
There we go. Off and running. We'll send you out into the race day and into the basketball day, everybody. Thanks to Rich Eng and Dave Hill for the fun conversation about the tourney. Sean Clancy was with us for action at Cheltenham, and Tony with some serious conversation, obviously, about traumatic brain injury. Dr. Joel Politi, CampAquila.com. If you have your own child or relatives that could benefit from a facility and a camp that you know, caters specifically to quirky kids, as they call them. Really nice of Joel to join us, and Joe Pace as well, who had a big NHC. Weekend preview at the races tomorrow, brought to you by Twin Spires, and I do owe Papo a visit. We put it off all week, so we got to get Papo in, and Nick Tamaro, of course, and we'll look at a lot of the Oaklawn action with the two stakes and cross country pick five, the coast to coast pick five, Gulfstream and Santa Anita. We'll talk to Hammer, who's got his new lawn. Wait till you see his new lawn. New landscape work. And say hey, Mighty Raiders. Let's get a big upset out of things tonight. 7:30. Against the Longhorns. On to victory, we're marching. Fight, fight, fight for dear old Colgate. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting